The reading's taken from Luke chapter 24, verses 13 to 35. That day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you only a visitor to Jerusalem and do not know the things that have happened there in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it's the third day since all this took place. And in addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said. But in him, they did not see. He said to them, 'How foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Christ have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?' And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself." As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus acted as if he were going further. But they urged him strongly, "Stay with us, for it's nearly evening. The day is almost over." So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?" They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, "It is true, the Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon." Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
It was him. It was him all along. We should have known it. It's quite true that we were distracted as we were walking along. In fact, we really didn't want any company at all. We had far too much on our minds to be making small talk with a stranger, particularly a stranger who seemed to know nothing about what had been happening in Jerusalem during the festival. How could he possibly have missed all that had taken place? He must have come from somewhere well outside of the city to not even have had an inkling of the events of the last 3 days. Well, as the stranger didn't seem to want to leave us, we stopped and we started to explain to him, beginning by telling him who we believed Jesus to be. Words came hard. Nothing seemed to be quite adequate to express our love and our sense of loss. We stopped and started several times over. We even stopped to weep. But he didn't become impatient. He didn't dismiss us. He didn't comment. He didn't ask questions. He simply listened. He listened to us with the whole of his being. And as he did so, and as we told him all that had happened, we began to feel a sense of release, as if we were laying down some of the burdens of the last 3 days. As we finished our story, we all paused. And it was only then that he began to speak, chiding us gently and drawing upon what we had told him to show how our master had to die to fulfill what had been spoken by the prophets. His knowledge of the scriptures was amazing, but we didn't feel intimidated by him. Instead, he drew us into the discussion, inviting our opinions, leading us through the words that we had heard thousands of times, but leading us to see them in a new way. The scriptures came alive, and they meant more to us than they ever had before. And slowly, slowly, we began to understand that there might have been a purpose in what had happened, that it wasn't simply the end of all of our dreams. And then, before we realised it, our journey was over. We'd arrived at Emmaus. We turned aside to stop for the night, and something made me ask, very hesitantly, because he was still a stranger after all, "Would you like to stay here with us?" We were surprised when he agreed. Surprised, but pleased. It wasn't until we sat down to share in our meal and he took the bread in his hands that memory began to stir. The times that we had broken bread together. The time when he'd taken a boy's lunch and shared it amongst thousands of people. That last meal with his friends. It was him. It was him. We should have known it. The women were right. He tried to tell us himself. So many times today he tried, including on the road. Hope wasn't dead. He was here with us now. We turned to embrace him, only to find that he had gone, vanished. Well, of course he would, wouldn't he? He knew that now we understood. And more than that, now we had a job that we had to do. We had no time to sit and to eat. There were people who needed to hear the good news. I wonder if anybody here is a fan of the Winnie the Pooh stories. Show of hands. Oh, good. There are a few. There are a few, definitely. If you are a fan of Winnie the Pooh, then you'll know that one of the catchphrases that's very often used is that it's so much friendlier with two. It's so much friendlier with two. A lot of Winnie the Pooh is about the importance of companionship and friendship. The friendship between the animals, the way that they care for each other, and of course, the companionship of Christopher Robin as well. And it seems to me that the gospel story, the story of the road to Emmaus, is also a story that is about companionship. It's one of the best known stories of Jesus' appearances to his friends after he rose from the dead, perhaps because it is very often depicted in art. There are an awful lot of pictures, the disciples on the road, also of them sharing that meal together when the friends of Jesus realise that it is actually really Jesus sitting at the table with him, with them. But I think it's also a well-known and a much-loved story because it's one that we can very easily relate to. The two friends are on the road discussing the events of the past days, perhaps with some excitement, certainly with bewilderment, and also with sadness. They're joined by a lone stranger who seems to be seeking some company because perhaps the roads were dangerous in Jesus' time. He wanted some extra company as he travelled. First of all, he listens to them, and then he joins in their discussion. And as the relationship develops and grows, the travellers ask the man to join them for the evening, offering food and hospitality. But it's not until the stranger breaks the bread and gives thanks and praise that they recognise him for who he is. And it's at that point that Jesus leaves them, having equipped and encouraged them to take the next step on their journey. And as is so often the case, when the risen Jesus appears to his friends, he meets them where they are and leads them on a journey through their doubts and into faith. In this case, he joins the travellers on the road, and he simply becomes, first of all, a silent companion, someone who is there to listen as they pour out their pain and their excitement and their confusion as they share the events of the last 3 days. These are people who need to talk, and Jesus listens. And it is not until they have finished that they have poured their hearts out that he begins to respond and to teach them. And when Jesus does respond to the two travellers, he does so by taking them on another journey. Beginning with the earliest scriptures, he explains God's plan to them step by step in a way that they can understand and relate to. But also, it's a way that excites and enthuses them, because we hear later that they say, "Were not our hearts burning within us as he spoke to us on the road?" Jesus doesn't mystify them or baffle them. He doesn't leave them feeling inadequate by what he has to say. He explains the scriptures to them in a way that leaves them wanting to hear more, to an extent that they offer their hospitality to him, inviting him to come and share their food and their lodging. And it's as Jesus breaks the bread and pours the wine that his identity becomes clear to them. To me, this recognition seems to be a natural result of their having journeyed with him. He's brought them to this place, a place where they can make that step of faith and recognize Jesus for who he is, the Son of God. And it's as they make that step that Jesus vanishes. His work is done, and he leaves them free to run, to dance, and to take themselves as quickly as they can all the way back to Jerusalem to share the good news that they have discovered with others. Today, as you've heard, is Godparents' Sunday. Many of you here may well be godparents. Can I have a show of hands? Anybody who's a godparent? Whoa, loads of you. Brilliant. You will have made promises as godparents. I'm sure you can remember those promises. Perhaps you've even got a little card at home with those promises on it. Some of you may well have even made the promises here in this church. And I'm sure and I hope that you are all delighted with your involvement with your godchildren and the times that you share together. It strikes me that although this story has a lot to offer to everyone who wants to follow Jesus in our daily life of faith, the role of being a godparent can very much be modelled on the role of Jesus in this story. As godparents, you've made promises to share with your godchild's parents in the care and support of your godchildren. But how is that worked out? First of all, part of your role is to be a companion, both to your godchildren, but also to their parents. You are there to listen, to hear their concerns, their hopes and dreams, to be there as a support and as a friend. Now, that doesn't mean that you need to be experts. You don't need to know all of the answers. Simply being there is enough. Being a support, being a listening ear, your presence is all that is needed, so that in times of difficulty, your godchildren and their parents know that they are not alone. Sometimes we all need that friend, don't we? Just to stand alongside us, just to listen to us without interruption, without criticism, just as Jesus did to the two travellers on the road. Secondly, as godparents, you will have a role in teaching your godchildren the story of God's love for the world. And by following Jesus' example, you can do this in a way that won't mystify or antagonise them. Just as Jesus listens first and then begins to explain to the travellers God's plan based on what he's heard from their own experience, so as godparents, you can explain God's love to your godchildren, beginning with what they know and leading them step by step on a faith journey. You may well tell your godchildren stories of Jesus, but more importantly, you also will show them God's love through your actions in the love that you share with them and with their families. As a godparent, you're also called to pray for your godchildren,
to ask for God's care to be upon them. And it's through those actions, your love, your prayers, and the reality of faith, that you will enable your godchildren to know something of the love of God too. And then finally, as your godchildren grow and develop, there will be a time when you will need to take a step back and allow them the freedom to respond in their own way to everything that you have offered and taught them. Just as Jesus vanished from the traveller's lodging, which left them free to be able to go and tell others about their experience, so sometimes we are called to take a step back and allow others the freedom to go and find their own way. If Jesus had continued to stay with the travellers in Emmaus, if he'd continued to teach them and to share in that meal after their realisation, they'd have been so keen to stay there with him, to find out more, to be in his presence, that they wouldn't have headed back to Jerusalem to share their good news. Then they wouldn't have been able to encourage and energise the other followers in their turn. It's important that we know when is the right time to step forward and to teach, and when is the right time to step back and to allow your godchildren to shine and to take on their role in their turn. This probably all sounds quite daunting, to sign up to be a great listener, a teacher, one who is willing to make sacrifices and take risks. Is a hard thing to do. And yet, if you think back to the baptism service, if you remember the words of the service, when we make the promises that we don't make them in our own strength alone. The promises are made with the response, with God's help we will. With God's help we will. Just as the role of godparent demands that we walk alongside our godchildren as they grow and develop, so we are reminded that whether we are a godparent or not, Jesus walks alongside us each and every step of our Christian calling, just as he walked with those disciples on the road to Emmaus. Amen.